Raised in the South, I come up from nothing, I figured it out. They say when I sing, I'm the voice of the South. Give thanks to the Lord, cause I'm making it out. I can't believe I'm living my dream. Early morning flights, the skies are filled up with these whistling wings. Sights that dreams are made of. Look at God's creation. Dust coming in as we struggle to load. Kid number two is a hell of a load. Shots going off as they dropping the hood. It's so cold and my call keeps sticking. I'm being precise with the notes I'm picking. My lead is true, so no duck, I'm missing. Full choke, so I'm good at a distance. I should've retake.
Listen, you know, one thing we can all agree on is we all like to consume music. And in order to do that, you have to have a speaker. And if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably an outdoorsman or trying to get into it. Turtlebox Audio is the speaker for the outdoorsman. One, they're loud, they're waterproof, and extremely durable. And when I say loud, they're loud. And not only that, guess what? You're having a party, your buddy comes and brings his too, pair them together, even louder. You can jam your favorite songs, whether you're on the boat, by the fire, grilling out, you name it, they've got the speaker for you. Go check out Turtlebox Audio on Instagram or turtleboxaudio.com. Use code QUACKSHACK at checkout to save you some money. These things are loud, they're durable, they're waterproof. Go get you one. QUACKSHACK. Use code QUACKSHACK at checkout. Hey, I know there's a lot of public land hunters on this podcast, and maybe you just have access to a lot of land with a big lake. To access that water, you need a boat. And when it comes to boats, you want something that's built by a craftsman. Something mass-produced, you know, sometimes they miss things. We have a new sponsor, Hybrid Boat Co., out of Louisiana, that is a boat building sucker. Our boy Luke over there has some of the nicest looking boats. It's crazy the concepts he comes up with for these boats. They look good. They're durable. They perform well. You name it, they've got it over there. Go check out Hybrid Boat Co. on Instagram or hybridboatco.com. Check out some of the options he has. Maybe shoot him an email. Tell him some options you want added to your boat. They've got it over there. American made here in Louisiana by a true craftsman. Hybridboatco.com. Welcome back to another episode of the Quack Shack Podcast. Thank you for listening. Thank you for liking. Thank you for sharing all of our stuff on Instagram. And more importantly, I mean, I guess it's kind of equal. Thank you for following us. I feel like, Jackson, yeah. I feel like every time we mention something about following us, we'll get a couple hundred followers off of it.
Yeah, no, it happens. It happens. People are finally listening.
Yeah, and guess what? Listen, guys, if you're one of them people, hey, I think our demographic is extremely wide. I know we have female listeners, male listeners. I know there's some older guys. I know there's some game wardens, you know, like, it's pretty wide. If you don't have an Instagram, that's understandable. I understand. But if you do and you're not following us, y'all are missing out on some content. Y'all are missing out on all kinds of sneak peek stuff. You know, we give a lot of sneak peeks on the podcast, but we also give a lot of sneak peeks on Instagram. And then
you can see me and Austin's pretty faces too.
Yeah, yeah. And then sometimes, you know, there's the select people that follow my personal Snapchat. There's some of y'all that do. I don't give it out to everybody, but that's where you see it first. So you want to become, not that it's anything special, but if you want to see the behind the scenes stuff, the first drop of everything, the first release of anything that we've got going on. That's what I released it on Snapchat first. So I don't know. Follow us on Instagram if you got an Instagram at the Quack Shack Podcast. our insights are through the roof, but our followers, you know, I'm not going to say they're not getting, you know, we're gaining followers by, you know, weekly. I mean, we've been doing pretty good as far as followers go.
But, ever since we started mentioning it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
So go check it out. Go check us out at Take'em_Falco. Take'em with two E's. If you haven't listened to the latest episode, the NWTF mashup, that was a good one. Had some really good guests on there. Had Blake Hodge, he was a recurring guest. Finally got to meet him in person. I met Brendan Lamb. Yeah, that was one of my favorite guests I got to talk to. One of the most interesting people I think I've ever met. There's not much he hasn't done in any industry. He's been all over and done it all pretty much. And he's like 33 years old. He's a pretty cool dude.
Yeah. I was pretty upset I had to miss that whole thing.
I know it. Well, next year. Definitely be a yearly thing. So.
Well, we're even on backing out on NWTF now.
Yeah, we're even. I backed out last year, Jack. Well, you had a good. I mean, I had a good excuse too. My family got sick last year, so I had to stay in your wife's birthday party. So, you know, it's understandable. But
yeah, NWTF, pick a different weekend.
NWTF show. We obviously didn't talk about it a whole lot. We might have to do like a recap episode because that was a wild week. Met a lot of people. I probably talked to 10,000 people that weekend at the Mallard Bay booth. And I met so many people, you know, people that listen to the podcast, people that I've talked to on social media, and then just a bunch of new people, you know. It was a good time, very successful as far as networking and stuff. And then obviously a great time. You can't go to Nashville and have a bad time. But there's a couple more shows coming up that we're probably going to attend, so be on the lookout for that. But yeah, let's dive into this episode, Jackson. What do you say?
I'm ready, man.
All right, today's guest is a guy that shoots a lot of birds. He's got a pretty solid Instagram following. He hunts with some guys that we know. I'm sure we'll dive into that. He lives in Nashville now, but I'm excited to hear what more about this guy. We got Nathan Forrest on the podcast going on. What's going on, brother?
What's going on, y'all? Oh, excited, man, to be on here. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, for sure, man.
For sure.
You forgot to mention he's got some incredible flow.
Yeah, dude, the locks. you got the locks, let me tell you.
Man, I appreciate it. I kind of trimmed it back this year.
Yeah.
Last year it was full go. This year I had to keep it mullet because I had an issue.
Uh-oh.
Literally I couldn't wear any hats.
What?
It was, I swear.
What kind of issue? What kind of because your hair was too thick.
Yeah, it was too thick, and no hat was deep enough. It was brutal.
You got to get a little bit of thinning.
I had to come back to the mullet.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's funny, man.
Take the sides off.
That's funny that you said that, Jackson, because I feel like that's something I've noticed before. I've been following you for a while now, and, you know, you don't see a ton of guys, like, in the industry that's got long hair. You know what I mean? But
yeah.
But you definitely got the locks, and I noticed that when I met you in person at NWTF, which there is one guy out there that has the signature locks going on in the industry, and that's Hollis Blanks. Do you know that guy?
Oh, yeah.
That dude's got some hair for days. We did a live, an in-person podcast with him, and that's the first thing I said. I said, dude, you've got some hair on you.
Absolutely. No, he does. And I don't know. It just runs in the family, super thick. I mean, I'm not even exaggerating. It's like a lot of hats.
Yeah.
I wanted to wear. I couldn't even wear because they set up on my head way too high.
Yeah.
Had to cut it back to the mullet.
That's how the kids wear it these days anyways. You got to wear it high and kind of point it down a little bit, you know?
Well, I'm 31 now, just trying to keep up with the trend, you know?
Yeah.
So I get it.
No doubt. No doubt. So obviously, I know this just because I met you, but you live in Nashville now, but where are you originally from?
So I'm originally from Kingston Springs, Tennessee.
Okay.
It's west of Nashville. My whole family still lives there. I mean, brothers in Dixon, mom and dad still out in Kingston Springs, White Bluff area. Small towns outside of Nashville. It wasn't until I started playing baseball and et cetera that moved into the city just because it was convenient for, you know, all the gyms I trained at in the off season.
Yeah.
And then just kind of, you know, if you spend so many years here and then it's kind of hard to move away. And especially with work and everything, it feels like Nashville's just centered around every direction of Tennessee where I have to work. So,
yeah.
Still convenient. It's probably short lived, maybe one or two more years, but going to enjoy it.
A little dangerous, huh?
I'm still here. Oh, buddy. Very dangerous.
Dude, I was there for, I went to Nashville for the first time last year. It was probably like a month before NWTF and for a bachelor party. And then when I went this, you know, I went for NWTF this year and I was there for 4 days. I think last year, and then I was there till from Thursday to Sunday this time. And, man, it's not hard to get in trouble around there.
Let me tell you, it's the one city where I think everyone's goal is to come for 3 or 4 days, however long you're staying, and just drink every second that your eyes are open.
Oh, man.
That's the biggest issue with the place.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%.
Well, I bet it's an issue to people like you that live there for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's the only city I've ever been to, you know, playing professional baseball, only in the minor leagues, but still just going to so many cities.
Yeah.
You know, pretty well versed in what the bar scene looks like in certain places.
Yeah.
This is the only city where, I mean, Monday through the rest of the week, there's something to do.
No doubt.
So you
can't get bored.
When you're new here, literally, when you're new here, you're like, oh, that's hard to say no.
Yeah, no doubt. So I got to experience this time. I think we went downtown or to Broadway once, but I got to experience Midtown, which was cool. I think that's where a lot of the locals hang out.
Yeah, and that's local avenue right there.
I liked it. Man, we went to this one place. I can't remember. I can't remember what it's called.
It got a metal roof.
Man, it had like fire pits outside.
Fire.
What? It was over. I think it was like a bar right next to the Palace. I believe. Maybe, unless the Palace is downtown. I don't know. Anyways,
The Palace is like the outskirts over there by Opryland and all that. Midtown's like your Tin Roof, you know, Live Oak, et cetera, stuff like that on the Mumbering Street.
Yeah. Well, I know we went to Midtown, but this one bar in particular really caught my interest because it was, you know, it had like music and stuff on the inside, but it had like little fire pits on the outside, which I like, you know, that's my favorite type of hangout, sit around a fire.
Oh, heck yeah.
And
that might have been an Urban Cowboy or something like that.
I don't know. It was pretty cool, though. So, how long have you been over there in Nashville?
Man, so I was, let's see here, graduated high school 2010, went off Tennessee, year there, then MTSU. Drafted in 15, and it was basically after 2015 that I was
okay,
you know, in the off season in Nashville till now.
Yeah. So you kind of mentioned off season, you know, as far as training wise, is what kind of potentially moved you there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, explain, let's talk about a little baseball before we dive into to hunting, because I'm a big baseball guy. I played baseball growing up all the way till high school. I got a scholarship that I didn't even go to. You know, I wanted to work and I fell in love, which it worked out because I married her. So
I don't blame. Well, heck yeah. Don't blame you one bit then, brother.
So explain the process, you know, like when you got your just starting in high school, were you, cause you were a pitcher, right?
Yeah, I was in high school, you know, you play every position.
Yeah.
You know, just like every sport, at least you're, you know, y'all are from Texas, you know, Tennessee, et cetera. Seems like that in the South. It's like, if you're a decently athletic guy, you play as many sports as you can.
Yeah.
You play all of them. Especially if you're from a small town.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
You ain't got no choice.
I was football, basketball, baseball, and wrestling.
There you go.
We didn't even have wrestling.
We didn't have wrestling.
We ain't got wrestling here in Texas. Only the big schools got wrestling in Texas. You must have went to a big school.
No, I was actually tiny school, but it was weird. They did have wrestling, and it's not big in Tennessee at all, but they had it. So I can't explain it. I don't know.
You say small. How many people did you graduate with?
I graduated with, I think it was 90 something guys.
Oh yeah,
90 something people.
That's small. I had like 150, so not much bigger, but a little bit.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm sure there's people that can say that, oh, that's big compared to where I went to, but then
no, that's still small.
I hear people being like, I graduated with 500, and I'm like, what? That was like my whole school.
Yeah.
I graduated with like 400. I think I graduated with like 400, I believe. And I'm
that's a small school.
A small town. That's a small school, In Texas. Dang. In Texas, you'll have, like, my wife, her graduating class was like 1,400.
That's insane.
Yeah. That's insane.
Can you imagine sitting through that freaking graduation?
Oh,
hey, that's why they're producing those prodigies out of there.
Yeah.
Look, people are always like, dude, Texas got the best athletes. And don't get me wrong, Texas got great athletes, but there is a ton of people that live here.
Yeah.
You got to, you know, the ratio is better.
You got to do a per capita type thing, you know?
Exactly.
Hey, we can get into that whole conversation. The best state per capita for athletes is Louisiana.
I didn't know that.
Louisiana, hey, that's them Bayou boys. They are tough. I'll give them that.
Drinking that Bayou water. That's why they're so big and strong.
Exactly.
Well, if they can make it through the chemical plant, the alligators, and that water,
literally,
you got to be pretty tough to, you know, survive in the womb.
Yeah.
First of all, breathing in the pollution.
I mean, look at Bobby Boucher.
Yeah, that's right.
Exactly.
No, I'm with you there. That's one of those states that if you're not from there, you're like, man,
this place sucks.
I wasn't going to go that far, but it's like, I couldn't imagine going swimming or duck hunting and stepping on like a hibernating alligator.
No, And they'll tell you, hey, man, don't worry, bro. If you feel something move between your legs, it's probably a gator. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
It's not a big deal. Don't worry. If you're in the marsh, if you're hunting a marsh and you feel something between your legs, it's probably a shark. You probably want to get out the water then.
Yeah.
I'm like, dude, no.
Yeah, see, in all honesty, like, you know, that's fine for me, but it's like when I take my dog.
Yeah.
I don't know. My dog.
Heck no.
You know the bond between a dog owner.
You say it's like, fine for you, but that ain't even fine for me. I definitely wouldn't take my dog.
Yeah.
I'm barely going, much less the dog.
I'm the same way when I'm hunting in the other places I do and running holes and whatnot. I'm like, it's fine for me to, you know, put myself in risk, but y'all get out of the boat and stay out of the way and take my dog with you and just meet me in the hole.
Yeah.
So you're the hole runner, huh?
Yeah, that's kind of been the tradition for a while now.
Yeah, so let's just dive into it. So I was watching, you know, for those of y'all don't know, you hunt with Dr. Duck every once in a while.
Yeah, we hunt together a good amount.
And I was watching one of the videos from it might have been this season, but or maybe last season, but you were definitely the hole runner. And I don't see why you wouldn't be. I mean, you don't play no professional sports anymore, but they were talking. I heard a little bit about how fast you were and how you smoked these guys. I talked to Dennis about it before, about how fast you were.
Man, I'll tell you this. I've had three knee surgeries.
Ow.
Along with several other surgeries, but I have been known to be decently quick.
Yeah.
You know, especially between a group of hunters.
Yeah.
And
hey, nobody knows not the most athletic bunch of folks.
Yeah.
You know, hey, just I don't care who gets mad at me about this, just generally speaking, you know, they're not always the most athletic.
100%.
No, I'll just say.
Yeah. 100%.
So yeah, and I don't know, man, I swear I'm 31, but it's like I don't lose. It's like every year my love for it grows stronger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't even know how to explain it. I just stay hungry for it. And
I mean, and you're naturally competitive. You know, I mean, not one.
Yes.
One, you're an athlete, right? You play professional sport. And then two, nowadays, I mean, duck hunting is 100% competitive, whether people like it or not. It really is. And
it's very competitive. And, you know, it's kind of replaced my competition for baseball now that I'm retired.
It's your outlet for your competitiveness. And I think that's the same way for a lot of people it is.
No doubt.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I used to, when I still played pro ball, I used to kind of not make fun of, but like, you know, semi make fun of people who played softball.
Yeah.
And now that I'm retired, I'm the exact guy. I'm the exact guy that I made fun of.
Yeah.
Like, promise you that.
Tell me it's not fun though.
Oh my God.
Dude,
slow pitch is so fun.
I'm out of high school, dude.
I think I'm playing year round this year.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I started playing softball like a year or two out of high school. I had the opportunity to go play college ball and I didn't do it. And, my church, it's where it started. And, they were like, "Hey, why don't you come play on our softball team?" And I was like, "I don't know about all that, dude." And, they're like, "Dude, I promise you it's a lot more than you think it is." And I went out there and now these guys aren't athletes. I mean, there's some athletes out there, right? But it was 100% competitive, even though, you know, some of these guys don't need to be running the bases. And but it was fun, man. I really enjoyed it. And I was talking to somebody about it the other day about how I need to get back in it. But it's definitely a great filler for that. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. I don't want to stray too far off the whole running thing, but I'll repeat what you said. You know, it's funny because I'm like, dang, sometimes I'm like, I'm more competitive than I was in my later years with pro ball.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like the competitive animal just jumps out on every Tuesday night with doubleheaders.
There you go. So,
we're doing a doubleheader league too this year because I played in another league where it's just one game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's only like, what, 50 minutes? So it's boring.
Yeah. And I felt so unsatisfied after one game. I'm like, whoa.
No,
we just got started.
You're like, let me go. Come on, let's play.
Exactly. Let the boys run.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly, man. That's what the league I play in, we have doubleheaders like every other week. And so, like, dude, I always hate the week we got one game. I'm like, man, this kind of sucks.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, no, I'm with you.
Back,
that actually kind of ties into my whole running this year, though.
Oh, so really?
So this year was the first year that I played softball. I lived together with another guy that he's actually been hunting down with me in the areas that I hunt and whatnot. We share a house together in Nashville, and he's one of my good buddies. And he started the league up, and I'm like, you know, I'm still kind of, most athletes, especially, you know, professional, you know, any level, it's like you need a little time before you're good back in the sport, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. You got to sit there, lick your wounds, you know, whatever you need to do. Get over your anger about what you think the sport did to you, et cetera.
Yeah.
But my roommate started up, and I'm like, well, yeah, I'll try it out. Anyways, fell in love with it like y'all did. And then fell in love with it so much that I was playing left center all season with three knee surgeries. And, you know, that's the most traveled spot on the whole team. I mean, you're right in power alley, just running nonstop.
Yeah.
And then I was always the type of pitcher that if I threw it as hard as I could, there's a good chance there's going to be a strike. But if I babied it, there ain't no telling where it's going.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
You know, wild thing. Something.
Yeah.
And it carried over in softball. So,
there you
I
go.
Mean, every throw, humming. And
getting a little massive curl hop in.
Yeah. Oh, very active curl hop.
That's the exact same way I am, dude. If I play left field as well, and if, you know, if I try to just lob it up there, there's no telling where that ball's going to go. I have to throw it as hard as I can, or it's not going where I want it to be.
Yeah.
Literally, I just got to put it on a line and know that it's going in that direction. Otherwise, no, it could go over the backstop. Who knows?
Yeah.
I'll be the first one to admit it. That was my career as well.
Yeah. I mean, hey, that literally takes a real man to admit some stuff like
closer.
That.
That's a good closer.
That's why, hey, the second I got the pro ball, that's all I did. Late innings.
Yep. That's funny.
They said, hey, just throw the gas. They said, just throw the gas.
Just come in and give them the heater, Ricky.
But, hey, talking about softball and being the hole runner, you know, softball's filling that void for baseball and also keeping you in shape for those times that you do have to run the hole.
Yeah.
Which
I was going to tie into that. Absolutely. Because I'm telling you, when you play, let's see here, 15 to, I think I retired in 21.
Yeah. Yes,
2021. So how many years that is, I'm not going to do the math right now. That's too much. But, yeah, that's, you know, tough on the body, especially after playing college and all that. And, you know, especially after softball and just, you know, when I was playing pro ball, at least like I was training in the off season, throwing every day, you know, everything was in shape. Softball is just like work every day, you know, drink a beer if you want to, and then show up on Tuesday and no warm up, start humming it.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
So while my legs were in shape from playing outfield, man, I definitely overdid it with the throwing part, and I was getting these crazy, like, nerve things going on in my arms. I mean,
imagine.
Billy, when we'd go to Dennis's camp, and Billy's room was kind of over by the bathroom, and I'd have to sneak out of my room at night because I couldn't go to sleep during duck season, and I have to hit a massage gun on my arms and stuff to try and get my, like, have you ever woken up and both your arms were noodles?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Because you slept on them. Yeah, all the time.
Yeah.
Shit hurts.
Yeah. And you wake up and it hurts so bad and you're like, yeah, can't move them. We can't control them. Dude, that was like an everyday thing for me.
Really?
For a while.
That's bad.
Yeah. Bad. Yeah. So I'm telling you, it was rough. So it kind of helped our squad though, because I'd wake up at midnight and be like, well, I just hit the massage gun on it. It ain't getting no better.
Yeah.
Might as well throw my waders on and go sit out at the cut somewhere, you know.
Hey, you might be retired, but you're still the MVP. That's an MVP move right there.
I'm telling you, there were so many nights I did that where I was like, well,
I know I ain't going to go to sleep, so I might as well throw the waders on and go just sit at the cut somewhere.
That's awesome, dude. That's awesome. So we've had Hunter on the podcast. We've had Billy on the podcast.
Yeah.
We've had Dennis on the podcast. And we've all talked about that one morning a couple years ago.
The magical morning.
The magical morning. I love to hear everybody. Yeah. We've talked to all them guys about it. Everybody that's been on. Explain that morning and how bizarre and how amazing that was.
Man, I think the greatest thing about that morning is that it was kind of unexpected, you know?
Oh, yeah, no like, doubt.
We thought we were going to kill some, but didn't, you know, no one could imagine what happened.
Yeah.
You know, I live in Tennessee, and I was at that time still thinking that I was still wasn't decided if I was retiring or not, et cetera.
Uh-huh.
You know, so I'm still doing my training thing, you know, trying to make sure I'm in shape no matter what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And so luckily Hunter lives in that area.
Yeah.
Got to do some scouting for us. And then Dennis and Billy, you know, they're always super great about scouting. Like, props to them. I won't drop any names, but they scout better than half these youngins in the group.
Yeah.
they scout better than Dakota?
Hey, no, actually, I'll give it to Dakota. I'm going to tell you, this year, Dakota, I mean, he surprised me. No,
Dakota was on him this year.
He was on him good. I was jealous. It was kind of like those in-stater days was
real nice. And they were killing him. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Well, me and the other guys that are out of state, we like to joke around with them and be like, well, y'all hunting private land, and that's the only reason you're killing them.
I mean, technically, but if you're comparing us out-of-staters and them, I mean, technically those certain days are private just to Arkansas people.
I know. We give them heck about it, you know, and it's funny, and that's a constant, you know, punchline at the camp and everything. But no, those boys are, I'd put them up against anybody hunting those areas and like knowing what they're going to do and what the spread should look like and what hole for which wind, you know, they may have less pressure, which they still try and argue and tell us that they don't have less pressure during the in-state days. But that's for a different time. But I give it to those boys. I mean, Dakota can get down on that Mondo, and they're all really great hunters. I mean, that's why I love hunting with them, you know.
Yeah.
Everybody's got that tight-knit squad where it's like a well-oiled machine, you know.
Everybody knows their role.
Yeah. And you just pop up in the hole. Everything goes smoothly. It doesn't feel like work. You know those days where it's like maybe you and your one buddy take like six random days and you feel like you had to do every single thing. You almost felt like you were guiding but not getting paid.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like that with them. Those are my favorite days of the year when it's my whole squad like that and we just get to go in there and we all got, you know, old jokes and whatnot. Those are the best times for sure.
Oh yeah. Let's reel it back a little bit to that morning. I want to talk a little bit more about that because that was like an iconic day not only to me, I think like all of social media was blown away about that morning.
Yeah. Oh no, I had buddies that weren't with me that know me well, and I've promised on, if you believe in the big man upstairs or not, I promise on that Bible, I've never lied to somebody about duck numbers.
Yeah.
It's just not my thing. It's like, you know, I pride myself when I kill them, but I also look at you and be like, man,
not gonna lie, we didn't shoot a thing.
Yeah,
you know, if I'm getting my butt whooped, I'm gonna tell you.
Yeah,
and I had close buddies being like, I heard y'all had five groups together, and that was just one picture. Blah blah. I'm like, dang, y'all haters just because we killed them good one day.
Yeah,
I mean, I ain't never lied to you before.
Yeah,
but no, it was an incredible morning, man. It was a full moon. I mean, normally as a duck hunter, you hate the full moon.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You know, ducks fly all night, comes like 7:30 or like even 45 minutes after shooting light, especially in the woods.
Uh-huh.
Quick flight, done. Yep. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I don't know. It was like our blessed day, you know?
No doubt.
Even the scouting that everybody in my group did, none of us had imagined like that was going to happen.
Oh, dude. I can only, you know, so, from the outside looking in, like, it was like, holy shit, right? But, like,
yeah,
I can't imagine what y'all were thinking. Like, you know, everybody has those days where the birds are working great and doing exactly what they're supposed to do. And even if you did it 7 days in a row and they did it that way every single day, you're still like, man, like amazed by it. Right. And if you're not, you probably need to quit duck hunting. And
absolutely.
But I can only imagine that morning, dude, the feeling that y'all had, the excitement, that is just, it's nuts.
Man, and it even built up more. So here's kind of the starter. So the hole we hunted wasn't actually the hole that I ran. Here's the kicker. So the water was so low, but yet high enough to hunt, that boats coming from a certain area could not beat the people like me running like losers without a boat.
Yeah.
So I ran up in there, and I mean, there had to have been, I don't know, man. There's a lot of headlamps on the bank.
Oh, dude.
And a lot of people talking about going to this area.
Yeah.
So I basically ran the track 800 in waders through the hole. I mean,
now somebody's carrying your stuff for you, huh?
Yeah. I'm running in just headlamp and a decoy like a football,
there you go.
And just nonstop ripping it. And I get in there, got the spot that we scouted and knew there was ducks in. And then there's another hole past that, and then another hole that's in Torres too. I mean, it's a known area.
Yeah.
It's not like this is not some secret area.
Yeah, no doubt.
And so the bank's lined up. I beat no telling how many runners. I don't even want to guess on that.
Yeah.
I mean, the bank was lined up. We get in this hole, and basically it scares off everybody because I want it. You know, they see the headlamp up there.
You didn't have none of them guys. Around. You didn't have none of them guys that were like determined that they were hunting there that morning.
No, man. I mean, knock on wood. I've been hunting that area. So my first time hunting it, I was like 12 years old.
Yeah.
But like consistently since I was like 17 or 18.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm 31 now. And I've only had that happen two times in my entirety of being there.
Really?
You know, people read killer handling and get all riled up. But
yeah.
It ain't always as bad as it seems, I promise you.
Yeah.
But, so it's funny, kind of scares off the rest of the group just because they're following the etiquette like people should, you know, like I'm huge on the old school etiquette about like, you know, if you get beat to the hole, then go somewhere else.
Yes, sir.
You know, you can ask anybody how it is, I've never once been mad that somebody beat me to where I stay there.
Yeah.
I may be butt hurt. You know, like, hey.
Yeah.
But also, I can't remember a time I lost. So
there we go.
Anyway. I was waiting for it, baby.
Never, never remember your failures, only your wins.
Yes.
That's you awesome. You can ask the squad. I'm batting 1,000.
So. There we go, baby. There we go.
I'm sure that'll change now that I spoke that. Do what? I said it's because we ain't ever ran into the same hole.
Yeah.
Probably.
I'll sleep in the trees.
You'd be like Hunter said, all of a sudden I'd be sitting there running. Hunter calls himself the ostrich. I'd just see an ostrich run past me. Oh,
that's crazy.
Hunter cracks me up, dude. That's one of my favorite dudes to hunt with, man. He's always got something that'll just like, you know how it gets on public land sometimes. Shoot, gets intense, yeah, or whatever, you know, and especially like you get the hole you want, and the hole next to you shot the first couple of volleys or something, and uh-huh, everybody's getting tense because they're like, what? You know, we've done our homework, so, you know, and Hunter's always great about being the guy that, you know, relieves the stress from everybody. He says something, we all start laughing.
I can see
once,
that.
It's weird. Once he does that and kind of gets everybody, you know, relaxed and remembering why we're in there and doing it, you know, it's funny. It seems like we, you know, when we're really just enjoying it for being there, it's funny. It seems like we always start to shoot something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I can definitely relate to that for sure.
I swear it's.
One thing I want to talk about that I haven't even thought about asking, you know, all these guys that were there that morning was the approach to the boat ramp that morning.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, was there people there at the boat ramp when y'all got there?
Oh God. Yeah.
So
on the way out.
On the way out. Yeah.
Oh, on the way out?
Yes, yes.
Oh, well, yeah, because we did that number and did it before, you know, like 9 o'clock.
So what?
Yeah.
What? Did anybody say anything? Like, how, like, were they shocked? Like, what? I can't even think of, like, what I would say, like, if y'all pulled up and then,
it was obviously a large number of guys. And that's why we were able to shoot that amount.
Of course. You know? Yeah, of course.
And so, you know, all the ducks are dispersed equally per man's limit, et cetera.
Yeah.
So I don't think there was this, you know, it wasn't the overwhelming shock at the boat ramp of like, oh my God, you got X number of ducks sitting on one boat. But there were definitely the guys that, you know, knew of me, knew of the other guys I was hunting with, knew which hole we were in. And hunting close to us. Yeah. But it's like, that's the crazy thing about that area, man, or like anywhere in the timber.
Yeah.
It's like, the longer you hunt there, you can kind of tell when somebody shot into a group of mallards that stuck through the tree or when they were kind of tree topping them, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard to explain, but you can just be like, that was tree topping right there.
Yeah.
You know, when you hear a long strung out sequence of shots where it's like, all right, that guy aimed on every shot and wasn't just going pow, 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 you know, rapid fire on some tree toppers. You know, you kind of get an idea and you get back to there's plenty of days where, you know, we kill our ducks, but maybe somebody around us shot them good too. And we're like, okay.
Yeah.
You know, we kind of got an estimate of how many birds they got. Yeah, I don't know. There were just so many gunshots that day in other areas too.
Yeah.
That I'm not sure if the other people outside of the ones that were hunting right next to us knew really what was happening.
Yeah, didn't
I'm sure I think, it sounded like a war going on.
Didn't one of the people you beat to the hole end up going to a different hole that morning and doing really well themselves?
Yeah.
I think I've been somebody told us that, yeah.
Yeah, so there were, there were several groups that I beat to the hole and, you know, they went to a different area and had very great hunts, you know, by any number of means.
Yeah.
Any other day of the season, you know.
Uh-huh.
And there was just a lot of ducks, and they were new, and they were getting silly.
Yeah.
They're being silly little ducks. See, here in Texas, when they get past the Red River, they become smart ducks. They get that Harvard education all the way down.
The Ivy League. Uh-oh.
Well, I think we lost him.
We lost him?
I don't know. I bet
his ear, his pods.
Shoot, my bad. My pods messed up.
There we go.
I heard what you were saying, and I was responding, and then I was like, oh, they ain't hearing me. That ain't good.
No. I did. Them AirPods are kicking the new ones, man. They did too much stuff.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, they're too fancy. I've been in the woods too long to know all the new tricks.
That's funny.
See, look, dude, you just got to get you the old AirPods, man. All simple. Yeah. You know, you hit them one time, they do what you need to do. These new ones, they got too many. They do too many things. I throw my wife's in. I'm like, dude, what is going on?
I'm telling you. Well, I had the old ones, and then I made the accident of leaving them in my work pants one day because I wear them when I'm running machinery.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Washed them. Not waterproof. See you later.
Yep. Dude, I actually had a pair make it through the washing machine and dryer and be fine.
Wow.
Really?
That's a good pair.
It's probably because I got a shitty washing machine. And it didn't wash them very. Probably not washing my clothes very good.
You said Harvard education on those ducks. Let's hang on to that point. I want to hit that. Uh-huh. And basically, the quick rundown of that day, dude, it was incredible. I mean, 30 minutes before shooting light, we're just joking around, you know, still getting decoys set and whatnot. And I hear a group of mallards come over, and this moon is bright, man. I mean, you can see the videos.
Yeah. But
that's not camera editing. I'm talking about 30, 45 minutes before shooting light. It looks like shooting light a lot of days during the year.
Uh-huh.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I mean, I just hear a big old wad of ducks up in the air, calling, feed chuckling, et cetera. And everybody's talking, chit chatting, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I just start goofing off and calling at them. And next thing I know, I mean, it's one of the big, it's the biggest group of ducks I've ever landed in the woods in my entire, well, anywhere in my entire life, like that close to me. They were swimming through my feet, like I promise you.
Yeah, so I believe you. Crazy. I believe you because I've been hunting in Arkansas for, this was my seventh year. I only went once this year just because we didn't really have to go anywhere. But my first time going to Arkansas, I went up there with a buddy of mine that's a local, and he was telling me stories about that. And my first ever Arkansas experience, I got to witness that duck swimming right by you. It was insane.
Man,
so I believe you. I believe you.
Well, I appreciate it. It's hard to describe. Like, back in the day when you could run all the motion stuff on the water and whatnot in Arkansas,
uh-huh.
I mean, I've never seen a motion spread that looked like that when those ducks went.
Oh, I imagine.
Oh, no.
No, I promise you.
I mean, have you ever looked at a group of ducks from a drone? You get a real idea for what your spread lack when you look at them from a drone. You're like, oh my God, yeah, I know why they don't want to land here.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We need to hit on that point too. That's going to tie into this season hard.
Yeah.
Y'all keep just saying things I wanted to talk about.
Oh, well, perfect. Good. That's kind of what we're supposed to do.
Yeah. You're just hitting the points on the head.
Yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, that's something that helped us out a ton this year was
for sure.
You know, I've had a drone and I've been flying it for a while, but this year, I remember the day before opener, we were like, man, we hadn't found nothing. Didn't really have anything. We're like, okay, we're going to go to another state and hunt. And I was like, let me go drone this one place and go out there and look. And sure enough, I go out there and there's a couple hundred mallards. And I was like, that doesn't happen in Texas on opening weekend. Like there's not mallards pretty much any time really until the last week or two of season, pretty much how it normally is. So, I was like, man, so, you know, I'm droning it. I'm like, man, those ducks are all like butt up and all moving. And they're like, man, let's go buy some more motion decoys. So we went and bought some more motion decoys. And next morning we had a pretty good hunt. And we're like, man. And the next time I drone that same spot, they were all butt up again. Like, dang near every one of them was butt up. And I was like, man, I'm going to go buy some more butt up. And sure enough, go buy some more butt ups. They did it even just a little bit better. And I was like, man, I think the way to do it is just figure out how the ducks are feeding in that place and just, you know, set them up just like that. And it worked perfect. Didn't matter how the wind was. Just set them up how the freaking birds were the day before.
Yeah.
Man, you are setting me up so hard that I can't even hardly talk about this magical day that you're talking about, because I had an incredible three man that, like, it was almost more satisfying than the day we're talking about on the last day of season this year. Uh-huh. And anyways, let's hold that. I'll finish my story about the opening day thing that year.
Okay.
And you know, we're all building it up. I won the hole there. Funny thing is, we didn't even end up hunting that hole.
Yeah.
We ended up hunting the hole about 200 yards further south of it. Because Dennis, I'll give the Dennis full credit. He pulls up in there and, you know, and he did the scouting and told me that this was the hole I needed to run. Well, I run it, and it kind of deters the other people that were running against me to go somewhere else. And the boats coming from the opposite end are still nowhere to be found.
Mm.
And Dennis pulls up. Hey, I'm telling you, I'm huffing and puffing. I could have used oxygen. I'm shirtless. It's 28 degrees on opening day, which is great. And I promise you, I got my waders on and I'm shirtless and I'm dying.
Yeah.
Like, so that tells you, I mean, I may semi look like I'm in shape, but that run definitely kicked my butt. But,
hey, listen here. Don't be humble about your shapeness, okay? We see all the pictures you post on Instagram, buddy.
All right. I figured that one was coming. Fair enough. The cardio is lacking. Let me just tell you that.
Okay. I'll ride that one with you.
All right. But Dennis is like, hey, it looks like, you know, the wind. Good for both. This other one, you know, more notorious. You scared everybody off by winning this one. Let's go hunt this one. So we end up moving.
That's crazy.
And just, you know, 150, 200 yards away. And, yeah, man, it was crazy. So all that started to happen before shooting light. And it's like, you know, as a duck hunter, full moon, at least so many times in Tennessee where I'm from, when you start hunting the timber in Tennessee, if there's a full moon,
mm-hmm.
you're super likely to have, like, no exaggeration, 500 to 1,000 mallards come land in your spread, you know, 20 minutes before shooting light.
Yeah.
Can't shoot them.
Yeah.
And you're sitting there trying to be quiet, but they always end up getting up for some reason or another. And then shooting light comes, and you may shoot 8, 10, 15, you know?
Yeah.
You're like, great.
Sounds like a lot of our hunts.
Yeah, I'm telling you. You get so excited. You're like, oh, my God, this is about to be the best hunt in the world. And then all of a sudden, bam.
Where'd they go?
Cuts off like a light switch. They flew all night.
Yeah.
You know? And so I'm sitting there, you know, especially I've been through that so many times in Tennessee. I'm like, you know, I'm not going to get too amped up. Like, that was awesome. Like,
yeah.
You know, really, my day's made just for that number of birds that just landed in here.
Yeah.
I don't have to shoot anything, and I'm going to leave here just, like, okay with the run at least. You know, I'm satisfied with that run just from landing that.
Yeah.
And it was, like, just nonstop. Like, there wasn't a second to – there was no eating a Christmas tree cake. Or a nutty buddy, like it was. You shot him. Oh God! Hurry up, get the dogs in. Like,
yeah,
let's go. There's another group in here. And after about our second or third volley landing on the water, I'm finally like, hey, we got a, how many people we got? You know, and I'm like, how many people do we got? Because I know there's new people that I didn't recognize that were supposed to be with us in the beginning, you know? And because I'm like, we got a lot of ducks. I think we're close to our limit. And how many people we got? I'm like, Brandon. Brandon's my brother.
Yeah.
I'm like, Brandon, I'm running Riley on these ducks while I'm doing it. Go through the line and count how many people we got. And I expect him to come back, say, like 12, 13, you know?
Yeah.
He comes back and he goes, we got 22 guys. I'm like, what? Where?
Where did the other 10 come from?
Yeah, when did this happen?
That's funny.
But I'm like, well, they're finishing. They're sitting on the water. Who cares? Let's shoot them. So, anyways, we did our count, and, I mean, they just kept flying, dude. It was incredible. You know, it's the day you dream of.
Yeah.
On the Arkansas public land. It's, you know, your first time going there and you grew up, you know, you're like me, you grew up watching the Echo videos that are awesome.
Oh, yeah.
The RN TV videos.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, you're a little kid and you're like, you know, you're like, this would be, you know, there's no greater thing I could imagine in the world happening than like this number of ducks coming into the woods and me killing them.
Yeah.
And then you top like every video you've ever seen your entire life. And you're like, I don't know. It's kind of,
it's weird, huh?
You got to take them back. Yeah, it was like it happened too quick.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, no doubt.
But, yeah, it's definitely a day that, I mean, number one hunt by far in terms of numbers in the woods, but, it was just incredible how long the show lasted. I mean, it was like, I mean, if we'd had 40 guys,
yeah,
I mean, it might have happened, that's, you know, type thing.
Hey, that's nuts.
And they were just so dumb, you know, the ducks. They were. It was like they showed up that day.
Yeah,
I mean, this was a quote unquote low water opener.
Yeah, for sure.
We were doing that
for sure.
I mean,
yeah, man, but dude, that's something for all the new hunters. I mean, you know, if y'all are listening to this, you're just getting into hunting, dude. I mean, one of the best hunts we ever had was the day, like you're talking about, like just birds, just, you know, they showed up that day before and that's where they were, you know, that was the first day they were in the area. So, you know, if you can find a big group like that the day before, the next day they're going to be in there and that's, you know, they know where they're going. They found food. They were safe. That was their first day there.
Yep.
But, I mean, that can be some of the funnest hunts that you'll ever have. Mm.
100%. Oh, absolutely. I mean, those birds that are like the day before you checked in, you're like, ah, you know, nothing crazy. And then all of a sudden, yeah, that's by far my best hunts every time. I don't care how good a hunter you are. There ain't nothing like a bird that showed up that day or the day before.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
So anyways, fast forward to this year. And you're talking about the second they cross that Rogue River, how they're Harvard mallards.
Uh-huh.
Man, I swear that was every duck we shot this year. I am not exaggerating. And I know this is probably a common statement every year from a lot of guys, but this year distinguishedly sticks out to me and will forever for just how, like,
yeah.
We were steady and we killed ducks and it was a good year.
Yeah.
But just like, I don't know, it seemed like the out-of-stater days, they were already stale and they showed up on the in-stater days. Uh-huh. Just how the weather works, you know, just sure luck.
Yeah.
And, man, it was tough. I mean, if you weren't on your A game.
Yeah.
You know, you weren't going to kill them.
Yep.
It's funny. We were sitting at this one cut. It was one of the nights where my arms wouldn't stop doing that stuff. You know, the numb stuff from baseball.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, Hunter's going to be so mad at me, but I'm going to try and wake him up and see if he'll go with me. And I give him a little nudge, and he's like, what's up, pal? I was like, hey, you and Jake want to go with me? I'm going to go sit at the cut. And Jake Spears, he's a DU biologist, great guy. Love him to death. I mean, one of my favorite best man on the jerk rig I've ever seen before in my life. Like, there I'm talking go. About from 15 minutes before shooting light till the second we pack up decoys, he has got motion on the water. Like, by far the best guy on the rig I've seen.
Yeah.
And they both were like, yeah, we'll go, we'll go. So we get to the cut of where we're going, and this boat rolls up on us. I don't know, probably like 3:15. And they were late, you know. Well, they were late because my arms were numb. So they roll up and we start talking, you know. And when I was younger, it used to be one of them things where it's like, you're kind of scared to talk to somebody just because,
yeah,
you know, everybody may want the same hole. It's just intimidating when you're young. You yeah. know, to anybody. I don't care who you are.
Yeah, no doubt.
You could be Brock Lesnar, and you put him in a boat in Arkansas, and there's 15 dudes roll up, you know, older than you, ready to get that spot. It's a little intimidating.
Yeah.
And I just kind of learned with age, it's like, every time I just have a conversation with that boat that pulls up on me, it always works out better. You know, it's never worked out for the worst for me, ever, when we actually just us what we're doing.
Uh-huh.
So they pull up, and we're a little timid, and I just holler over at them. I'm like, hey boys, what's going on? Like, which hole y'all want to get? And come to find out, it was their first time in Arkansas. Mm. And they had a boat breakdown on the way, and there was like 6 of them. And this boat was too full of decoys and guys, and they were coming from way far away boat ramp south. I mean, definitely not the appropriate boat ramp to put in at to go to this hole.
Yeah.
And it was pretty obvious that, like, we were going to beat them, you know, to the hole if we wanted to, especially yeah. since we were, you know, kind of first in the little tiny cut. Uh-huh. Going in the woods anyways. And so I just had a discussion. I'm like, hey, which hole were y'all going to? Of course, they said the one we wanted to go to. And I was like, look, boys, like,
you, might not you know, here's a.
Well, I didn't even say that. It's like, hey, you know, like, you're welcome to try and run it against us. But, yeah. you know, we hunt here every day. And we've yeah. been doing our whole life. And we're first in the cut. So. The only way you beat us to that hole is if I run into a tree.
Yeah.
You know, or something. I was like, it doesn't matter. Y'all welcome to do what you want to do. You know, it's public land. It's a free game. Like, that's part of the reason I love about it.
Yeah.
You know, you can do what you want. It's 27,000 acres of a grown man's playground.
Exactly.
The best part about it. It's like that. It's kind of like when everybody came from the south and went to Wyoming and Montana, you know, all the yep. cowboys and whatnot. It's like the only undiscovered land. It is discovered, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
And so we were super nice because they were nice, and they were like, well, we'll just go to another hole, but we don't really know of any others around here. Man, I pulled out my Onyx and was just like, look, man, this is a great hole for this wind. It's right over here. Here's how you go. You know, just because they were super nice.
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, I don't want anybody going out there and having a bad experience. And they were definitely younger than me. You know, yeah. they were probably low 20s.
Yeah.
And that's the future of us being able to maintain this public land and still have the right to hunt it, you
no
know?
Doubt. No doubt. 100%.
So if I see you out there, I want you to have a good experience. And I want you to... You know, I want you to help fight for our rights to maintain that land and the rights to hunt out there instead of.
Yes, sir.
So there's no reason for me to be mean to you. Like, if you don't go hunt there, I'm sure somebody else would.
Yep.
So why not help them out and try and help the, you know, the younger generations enjoy that public land? And then who knows, maybe they, I mean, this is just crazy speaking, but who knows, maybe they go in there, shoot a few ducks, and then one of them becomes the president of Arkansas, you know, on the
Yeah, you never know.
Staff for Arkansas Game and Fish. You never know where they're going to go. You know, one of them could end up in Congress. Who knows? Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
But it's just like, let them have a good experience. So me and Hunter and Jake, we show them a spot that we legitimately, you know, it was our second option. You know, if we didn't get this hole, we were gonna go there and hunt with them when they ran it. And whatnot. And then they go to take off. And a starter, they had an old school Mercury 59 CI like I got. And they go to hit the key to take off to go over there. Dang starter ain't working.
Oh, man.
And so not only do they have to go, you know, a couple hundred yards away to cut, they still have to go back to the boat ramp and pick up the rest of the crew.
Yeah.
And so I gave them a hold, then pulled the cowl off the motor because I basically rebuilt the whole 59 CI Merc this summer.
Yeah.
Pulled the cowl off, hit a screwdriver, kind of pried up the wheel on the starter. Thing hit a lick first beat. And they were super thankful and went on their way, and I never saw them again. And didn't know how they did and et cetera. And I see them, it was crazy. I'm sitting at the palace, like you were talking about earlier at the turkey show, and that same group of six guys runs across the bar and all buy me a beer.
What?
And we're like the most thankful dudes ever. And like, they basically came to NWTF just to see guys like me and
That's
Dennis
awesome.
And all that. And they were, dude, it was really cool seeing it come back around because I had no idea if they shot any or not.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, how'd it go?
Never heard from them again. Well, they went 3 days in a row blanking before that.
Yeah.
And I think they shot like four or five.
Okay.
And they were like, it was the coolest thing in the world because we'd never seen mallards coming through the tree.
Yeah. That's awesome.
And I mean, and I'm taking myself back to, you know, a little younger than them, like 16, 17. And it's like, you remember when you're like, if just one mallard does it through these trees,
oh yeah,
I'm good.
Oh yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So they had that same kind of fire and just like want for that.
Yeah.
And so I knew that four or five had them fired up like the large numbers that we've shot before.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
No doubt. So, imagine if you would have been an ass that morning, you know what I mean? And then seen them guys, you know.
Yeah. They'd have been like, that bastard.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, you never know. I mean, first of all, it doesn't matter. You always be nice to everyone. You know, there's going to be times where you kind of have to defend yourself, but
yeah,
but
absolutely.
If you have any control over it, you never know who you're talking to. You never know who they're going to be one day. One day you might I mean, for all you know, their dad might own a construction company that you want to go work for one day. You know what I mean?
Literally. No, I mean, you're so right. And it's so many levels that are tied into the hunting industry. And, you know, between baseball and hunting, it's the smallest world I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
It's like I can go to Minnesota and start talking shop about hunting or baseball and know somebody who at least knows somebody that I know.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
For sure.
And it's crazy. And yeah, so it's like,
we hunted, you know, 13 states, whatever. And I swear to God, every state we went to, we saw somebody that we either knew or they knew somebody that we knew, you know?
Yeah.
I swear.
And it don't matter, you know, and back to the whole being nice to people, you know, it is a competitive thing. And a lot of people kind of sometimes take it too far. But, you know, before we started this podcast and before I was doing the taking stuff with Austin and all this stuff, I actually ran into Dennis. I mean, that probably had to be 5-6 years ago, or probably about 5 years ago at a boat ramp, you know, 7-8 hours away from where we live. We live in the same area. So it was just funny that we, you know, ended up at the same boat ramp. I knew who they were. Obviously, I didn't know who I was. I was just a 19-year-old kid. So, you know, we're putting in on the river and, you know, we're trying to get to the hole and we think they're probably trying to get to the same hole we're going to. And so we're all in a rush trying to get in. And one of my buddies had left his phone on on the boat when he was backing it in. So he dropped his phone in the river.
Mm.
And Dennis was nice enough to stop. Didn't even worry about getting to the hole first. We let people go by. And Dennis sat there and helped us look in the water for 20 minutes trying to find his phone. Finally found it. And I was just like, man, that's a good dude, man. And then, you know, come full circle, we're able to have him on the podcast, talk to him, get to know him. And it's like, man, you never know who you're going to meet or who you know, what connection you might make, you know?
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, and that's awesome. And it's like, if he'd have been, that wasn't even, he kind of went out of his way there. But there's plenty of circumstances where guys could just, you know, if you read killer handle, that's just, they're supposed to be dicks. You know, in that situation.
That is the most toxic Facebook page on Facebook.
Oh, man. It's like, it's crazy. I brought a buddy at the last 3 days of season, and he'd never been to that area before and is on tiller handling, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, you know, I was going to take him to the notorious boat ramp for the last day just so he could experience it. And he was kind of like, it's kind of like, man, I don't want to put my boat in there because I don't want somebody yelling at me trying to fight me while I'm putting my boat in. I'm like, dude, it is not like that. Quit reading tiller handle.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
100%. 100%.
It's like that experience you just talked about with Dennis. Like, let's say that was your first time out there or whatever. Well,
yeah.
And you were intimidated. Uh-huh. I'm not saying it is. I'm just saying, let's say.
No, it was 100%. The first day we had been there was the day before.
It was. Okay.
It was the day before. It's not anywhere you're thinking about where we were at. So, but it was the first time. It was the first time we'd ever been there, and it was the same situation with, you know, we had checked it the day before, and there was, you know, thousands of birds in this hole. We're like, dude, what in the heck? Because we'd been all around the area, just hadn't been to that place. And it was 100% new birds. You know, the next day we hunted them, had a good hunt, and they all just kind of dispersed the next couple of days. We're struggling to find them after that.
Yeah. But, like, if Dennis or, you know, Dennis never would, he's always, like, I can't tell you how many stories I've heard of him, you know, going out of his way to do that. And that's just
the guy. Well, if they would have backed in, they'd have broke his phone, you know, just like most people would have done.
Yeah.
I'm getting in, you know.
Yeah, and, I'm getting in. I'm in a hurry. I'm going to beat them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
but if he, let's just say, like, he'd have done that or you'd have had a bad experience downriver, like, it may have deterred you from ever going back.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
There's a lot of guys that go down there with this already, like, preconceived notion based off of tiller handle and other things that, you know, it's just this toxic area.
Yeah.
And you know, you gotta be this alpha male who can fight left and right to go in there. I mean, you know, it's just not the case. You know, and there's gonna be, I'll probably catch some ridicule for saying this, and I don't really care, because conserving the right to hunt this land is more important to me than, you know, maybe a couple of guys go because I said it's not as bad as people think.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, if the culture continues on the trend that some people, you know, only see, like, we're just going to lose hunters left and right. And we're just getting to a point in life with politics and everything where it's like, we need everybody on our side.
Everybody to be on the same team.
Yeah. We got to be on the same team, because otherwise we're just going to all of a sudden lose the right for everything.
100%.
You know? Yeah. And it's at the end of the day, if I, just like we met at Turkey Show and then other people, it's like the second duck season ends, me and you could have a 4-hour conversation, have a couple of beers and be best friends, and then all of a sudden duck season comes and it's like, you know, there shouldn't be that enemy once duck season comes.
Oh, exactly. Know? Yeah. 100%.
It's just kind of like, it's kind of like just, I don't know. I was lucky enough to where when I was taken down there, a bunch of older men, you know, my buddy's dad and all his buddies, they've been hunting down there their whole life, knew the etiquette, just like how you're supposed to approach things. And I just feel like the only issue nowadays with that stuff is just, it's cool to duck hunt on social media and it's cool to go to Arkansas on the timber. And it's a bunch of people who haven't had the privilege of learning that etiquette, you know, that, that I got to. And so I kind of, I kind of adapted the mentality of like, you know, I don't know how they got into duck hunting.
Yeah.
You know, so they may not have had the same, you know, ways that I'm grateful of them raised to do it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
For
and
sure.
That's one of the reasons why we wanted to start this whole thing, was just, you know, to help educate people that, you know, didn't have the opportunity to grow up in a family that hunted.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. That's exactly what I'm saying. It's like, you know, if I wouldn't have had those, you know, elders above me teaching me the right ways to do things, then, you know, who knows how I would have handled it when I got in there.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's all cool to, and it's, there's so many guys in the industry adapting that mentality. I'll actually brag on Brooks Tinsley right now, you know, the Lost Break guys.
Yeah.
He used to hunt a lot in the same area that I do, my favorite place in Arkansas to hunt. And so I met Ed Wall on one of our most epic hunts this year. Insane. Might have been cooler than the day that y'all are talking about. And Billy and Ed were friends, and he just invited Ed along to, you know, shoot some shots, do a thing, hang out, etc. And so we're at Turkey Show, and Ed introduces me to Brooks. We start talking shop and basically get on the same rant that us three just went on. And then Brooks was like, yeah, and, you know, I'll say this again. Don't matter who you believe in, that's just what I believe in, what Brooks believes in, et cetera. But either way, it's the mentality you need to think about. But Brooks is like, you know, he has the same mentality as me. Like, you know, the guy next to you, you don't need to get all fired up, like go into it with animosity, you know. There's so many guys that kind of think like, oh, this boat pulled up, F them or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, Brooks was like, yeah, I just started thinking about, like, how would I talk to those guys if Jesus was sitting in that boat with them? Mm. And he said this to me at the Turkey Show, and I was like, dang, that hits home. Like, that wasn't, I'll be honest, that wasn't the exact mentality that I was thinking about, but it was the same path and led to the same decisions.
Yeah.
And I hadn't even got into it that far, but I thought it was really cool of him to say that and just see, like, other people who, heck, he's probably been hunting there even a little longer than I have, you know, prior to his Lost Break thing and all those boys. But it's just cool seeing other people adapting that mentality. And I think that, you know, some of the social media platforms really set a, you know, a hostile environment standard when it's not like that at all. When you're there every day of season, you know, or every day you're allowed to be there during.
For sure.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, and that is, you know, that's one of the biggest problems is, you know, I grew up hunting. I grew up with my dad teaching me hunting, all his friends hunting, you know, growing up duck hunting with everybody. So I got to learn how to do it right. But, you know, even, I remember when I was in high school, even beginning of college, hunting wasn't as popular as it is now. You know, it wasn't the cool thing to do. Everybody always be like, oh, you know, why? Come out and hang out tonight. Like, no, I'm going to hunt in the morning. Why are you going to hunt in the morning?
Yeah, why are you going to hunt? Yeah. Why ain't you going to this party? Trust me. Hey, we grew up in the same way.
Yeah, and you know, now that it changed, they're all texting me, dude, hey, take me hunting, man. I want to go hunting. Let me go hunt with you. And I'm like, no, man, it wasn't cool, man. It wasn't a cool thing to do. But the moral, right. The moral of that story is, you know, about 2019, 2020, kind of even, I think COVID had a big deal, you know, big thing to do with it. People just wanted to get outside, you know, and, you know, when that kind of happened, a bunch of people got introduced into that all at once. And so they were all seeing, you know, the same, you know, they were learning from new people that hadn't ever learned how to, you know, hunt properly or, you know, hunt with the right etiquette on public land. And, I think that was 100%. That's one of the things. And that's not necessarily on those people. That's on the people that, you know, do hunt a lot and have hunted for years. And, we need to do a better job of, you know, not necessarily mentoring people, not the people need mentorship, but just, you know,
show them guidance. The right way to do it, you know?
Yeah. Well, absolutely. It's like, you know, the people like me and, you know, guys who have been hunting there way longer than I have and are still alive and able to go hunting in those areas, it's like, you got to take some responsibility in the hostility because you're kind of part of it.
100%. You know what I'm saying?
If you treat them with kindness and, you know, try and help a newbie out instead of being an asshole to them,
uh-huh.
Yeah, like it could change the whole dynamic of the way things work.
Yeah.
Yeah, because then, you know, you never know who they're going to be nice to next. You know, that's just one of those cliche things, like passing on, you know, those old commercials. And it's like, but it's the truth.
It is.
It is. It's like, hey, we're all going to get old. One day, I'm going to be too old to run the hole.
Yep.
One day, I'm going to be sitting out there hoping that some little youngster just respects the rules and lets me get the hole that I was close to first.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
But if I was an asshole to every youngster I met, you know, prior to that, then how can I expect that?
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
100%. And, you know, we can get off our soapboxes, but one thing it needs to be talked about, though. No, it does. No, and 100%, and that's, you know, that's why I'm saying, that's why I brought it up. It's one of my favorite things to talk about on here, because I know they're growing, you know, presence of people that are listening to the podcast and stuff. And I actually had a guy right into this. The first time this has happened, I guess, was I was helping a guy out doing snow goose hunts, and had one of our clients walk up and was like, "Hey, you're Jackson from the Quack Tech podcast." He's like, "Dude, I listened to your podcast, and that's kind of what got me into hunting and learning how to do it the right way." I was like, dude, that's freaking, like, that's awesome. That gave me so much motivation to be like, dude, let's hammer this thing, you know?
For sure.
And so, one thing I was going to ask you is, we've talked about your best hunt, which was, you know, something like a 23-man limit or something ridiculous like that. But what's some of your funniest / worst things that have happened while you're hunting?
All right, so... I mean, I think that list kind of grows every year, to be honest.
Yeah, of course. But those hunts are just as memorable and fun when you look back on it, you know?
They are, man. What we were talking about earlier, you talked about Harvard Mallards second they crossed the Red River. Dude, so I swear this year in the area that I hunt, we had a ton of birds. Like, you just did a flyover and looked at the birds, you were like, you know, these numbers are incredible. Everything's great, blah, blah, blah. But, buddy, them things have been here since Halloween. And that big cold front that we got right before season, you know, that blizzard that came through North Dakota, like right after Halloween and all that?
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, those birds had been there since then.
Yeah.
And this was, so kind of backtracking a little bit, still on the same topic. The reason I said this was like the craziest, most memorable year for me was because, man, I had never seen, like, you know, everybody talks about reverse migration in a sarcastic manner. I promise you, I'll put the pink slip in my truck, the note on my house, everything on the fact that that happened.
Oh yeah, so
regularly.
Yeah,
like, yeah, 100%.
Yes.
I know where you're at. There's plenty where y'all are hunting at. There's plenty of food around there. But where we're at here, you know, there's some wheat fields that'll hold water and those birds are in them. There's some, you know, there's some timber with some acorns, but you know, there's not just a ton of food down here.
Yeah.
So the birds, as soon as you know it warms up a little bit, they go back north. They go back, you know, an hour or two north. They can get in corn and wheat just an hour or two north. It's the same way, you know, just across the Red River, you can go hunt dry field ducks. But as soon as you get on the south side of the Red River, no dry field ducks. It's weird, man. I've seen ducks on the other side of the river hit a dry field. We have the same stuff planted on this side of the river, and you know, they don't want anything to do with it.
I'm telling you, man.
It doesn't make any sense. It zero sense, but something that they've learned over time, I guess. I don't know, but
you know, when birds get down here, they stop wanting to hit those, they stop wanting to hit fields. And so, you know, there's way more food for them to eat up north. And so if it warms up, they go back north. There's 100% of reverse migration.
100%.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, for so many years, I was playing ball and everything. And during the off season, you know, I didn't have time to hunt the multiple states I hunt now. And so I'm kind of sitting in my southern states being like, what the heck's going on? You know, like, we got food, we got refuges, but refuges, blah, blah, blah. And, man, it really opened my eyes after going to North Dakota my first year.
Yeah.
And like seeing a quote unquote cut bean field that I almost felt illegal hunting in because there were so many beans laying around everywhere, or a full on cut cornfield where there's full corn cobs laying everywhere.
Yeah.
Like I'm talking about everywhere.
Dude, you can go. You can go to a pothole up there, and there's corn in the water from the runoff.
Literally, I mean our technology on combines nowadays has gotten so great that a farmer can put in, you know, he can run one strip through his crop, and then all of a sudden it calculates his fuel economy, the speed, and the yield he wants, and so all of a sudden that computer does that work, sets that speed, and they rip through that stuff. So if they're getting, you know, they don't sit there and go slow and get every corn cob anymore because they may burn way more diesel. You know, doing that. So half the time, if they have a good year on these crops, they're flying through those suckers and just swinging full on corn cobs everywhere.
Everywhere.
It's crazy. I mean,
yeah. So we went up there this year during harvest season. It was right in the middle when everybody was harvesting. So some people were saying we did decent up there on our trip this year, but you know, people were saying, oh, you went a week too early, you went a week too late, whatever. But moral of the story is, it is crazy how much corn they leave on the freaking ground.
Man, I'm telling you, if you'd been in Tennessee hunting over that, you'd been
in jail, under the jail.
Yeah, literally. They'd have thrown you in the prison, but not even the jail.
100%. You wouldn't even, same thing in Texas, man. And, you know, we have cornfields, and we actually got lucky. And at the very, I'm talking about the second to last day of duck season, we got permission, and we got permission slash lease this place, and it's a big cornfield, and it's really the only cornfield in that area, and it actually had ducks you know, right after season, and we have at least through next year, so hopefully we'll get to hunt over some corn. But I kind of feel like, man, I don't know if I can do this.
You feel like an outlaw doing it.
Yeah, I feel like, you know.
I'm like, from the south, I feel like I'm doing something wrong. It's kind of hard to enjoy this a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, have you hunted in flooded corn yet?
Yeah, that's what a lot of Tennessee, I mean, that's mainly what Tennessee is.
Yeah.
Is nothing but flooded corn. That's kind of the issue with Tennessee now, is it's like, if it ain't a refuge, it's flooded corn.
Yeah.
Who knows it? I mean, and Tennessee's kind of underrated for its duck hunting.
Yeah.
I mean, up until 2015, we hit a freaking brick wall. But, I mean, I'd hunt the same blind every day, like legitimately the same blind, and be like 600 to 1,000 ducks, sometimes 1,250, and a lot of them being big ducks. Like, that was every year. Like, we'd kill 750 in a year and be like, yeah, we had a pretty good year. You know,
nothing
crazy, but good.
Yeah.
You know, and then after 2015, I swear, if you kill 300 in that same blind, you're like, oh, we did good.
Yeah. That's how it was here.
That's how it was here forever.
We ain't got no ducks in Texas, so you might as well just not waste your time. But
yeah, don't waste your time. It's terrible. Don't worry about it. But man, that's how it's been here for years, and I hope this year was not an off year and it gets back to, because used to where I'm at is more of a stopover area. You know, they stop here; it's the last place they stop before they hit the coast, because it's the last place that really has, you know, food as far as fields go before you get to the coast. And so birds would stop here, and we'd have good numbers all year. And you know, the last 5 years, that ain't been the case at all.
At all.
Yeah, 2015, El Nino.
Yes.
Yeah, ours was not 2015. Ours was good until 2017, 2018.
Yeah.
And then it started being terrible.
Absolutely terrible.
But I mean, if we'd have hunted just in Texas in those years and we'd have killed 250, I'd have been happy.
Yep.
You know, that's but it got, I think we had one bad year where we just hunted in Texas and that's fine. I was like, all right, dude, I'm traveling wherever I got to go.
Yeah. that's when it started.
Miles and mallards.
Yeah.
But I'm tired of it. I'm traveling, man. And I can't remember the first place. I mean, we had hunted in Arkansas with my dad and all that stuff. That's just, you know, I think the first place I went on my own, I think was South Dakota maybe or something like that. And we went up there, man, and I was like, are you kidding me? This every pond got freaking 6,000 ducks on it.
Yeah.
It's a cheat code up there.
This is ridiculous, man.
Yeah.
You're telling me you're hunting the same way I'm hunting? There ain't no way.
That's
no, we always make a joke. I don't care who it makes mad because it ain't a joke. It's true. But you take a southern boy and put him anywhere in the world duck hunting, he's going to kill him.
He's going to be all right.
100%.
Yeah, we were saying that for the longest time at the beginning of this podcast. It was one of the first things, like one of the first questions we asked every person we had on here. We started having people get mad about it. You know, complaining, we're going to get started. I'm like, dude, no.
You don't know the struggle.
Yeah, you go up there and you hit one quack at a duck and it sees a freaking decoy. It is decoying into your spread.
Yes.
Dude, into your layout line.
Yeah. Right.
That sucker's going to sit on your lap.
The lead ducks are trying to come into your layout line.
Yeah.
Yeah. Them ducks up there, dude, you hit a, they're flying away from you. You just hit one quack at them. They're, locked up, turned around.
Yeah. Yeah.
Down here, we got 15 dudes calling, rah, 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 you know, everybody's getting after it just to get two or three to break off.
I'm telling you. Seriously. I mean, our first year in North Dakota, my group of buddies, we all went to high school together and everything. It was awesome. We grew up duck hunting, but that's when Tennessee got bad. And credit to them, they kind of put it together. And, you know, I'm always down for a rendezvous somewhere. But, like, they kind of went out of the way and were like, you know, they got wife, kids, et cetera, you know, jobs that aren't as flexible as mine. And so more power to them. They're like, all right. Let's take these 10 days. Well, it was 9 for them. And I knew I had more flexibility. I went down the first day and did a bunch of scouting before that. And, dude, we hunted nine days in a row. And every day, but I think one killed our 8-man limit.
Yeah.
Somewhere mallard.
There you go.
That's our first time in North Dakota. I'm talking about no guide, freelancing. Like,
yeah, 100%.
No, I mean, we scouted our tails off. I put 6,000 miles in North Dakota alone on my power stroke. Like,
yeah,
6,000 up there.
No, yeah, 100%, man.
But we killed them. You know what I'm saying?
That's all that matters, dude. That's all that matters. And so we went up there. This year was actually, I guess it's the second time I've hunted in North Dakota. But the first year that we just did it with just friends, you know, I'd been up there once, but was only there for 2 days, and I went with a guy with my dad and when we were in high school, and you know, so we just went up there, freelanced it, dude. First couple of days, I'm not gonna lie, we got our ass whooped, but you know, third, fourth, fifth day, we started finding them, and we got on them finally. But man, we were driving all day, you know, sleeping in the trailer. We were sleeping in our decoy trailer.
Oh yeah, yeah. This year was terrible for me in North Dakota.
We got
our tail whooped in North Dakota this year.
When were y'all up there?
So we were up there same time. It was like, so we shortened the day because a bunch of two or three guys out of the group had just had kids this year. So they couldn't do the whole 9. So we did like, I think it was seven days for the whole group. And I came up early again to scout.
Yeah.
Dude, I scouted in the afternoon. I went up there alone. I drove straight from Tennessee to North Dakota on my own and showed up at shooting light in an area close, you know, it's about 45 minutes from where we were staying.
Yeah.
And I scouted all daggum day and did not find a mallard until literally did not find a mallard, not a single mallard.
That's crazy.
Until about 30 minutes before shooting light, and I finally found it, and White Pages let me down. Everything let me down. I ran around the ringer. Dude, I didn't get permission on this property until like 10 o'clock at night.
What, they had a posted sign up or something?
They did, but it was not. They leased out the property to a farmer.
Yeah.
The farmer that had it didn't care, but he didn't have permission to give me the hunt.
Yeah.
According to him. So I end up finding, dude, I go through the rabbit hole.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Go to the rabbit hole. And 10 p.m. that night, I finally get permission on this place, and it's like, it's a dang good field. You know, if we'd have seen this field like last year, I would have been done. You know, yeah. our nine man, we had nine guys this year. It'd have been toast. It'd have been awesome. They'd have showed up, blah, blah, blah. Well, I run through the ringer. Finally, it was literally like 10 p.m. I finally get permission on this field, and it just seemed too good to be true. It was like, yeah, we also own like every property in this area. So if you find another group, just let me know. You were super cool, like,
yeah,
respectful, did things the right way. You know, thank you for that. I also might have brought them some Pendleton whiskey.
There you go.
I always buy a case before I go up there and ask them if they drink. And it's like, here you go. Here's a handle of Pendleton.
Uh-huh.
And,
dude, the best way to get any permission on places up there, just figure out what the first night you get there, go to the local bar. Dude, the town might have four houses in it, but I promise you there's a little bar, and you're going to go in there and you're going to sit next to every farmer in the county.
Yep, you are. I mean, you're not wrong.
Hey, we're giving out big tips here.
Yeah, we might need to bleep some of that.
No, hey, look, dude, we ain't told them the area, but everybody knows. There's only two states that we will just go in depth about this podcast. And that is Arkansas, just because everybody knows there's birds in Arkansas and North Dakota. Everybody knows there's birds in North Dakota. We don't talk about anything
else. We don't talk about any other state.
The pressure in North Dakota was insane this year, though. I ain't never seen trucks like that.
What week were y'all up there? I wonder if it was the same time we were up there, because we kind of got our ass whipped too.
It was the days leading up to Halloween.
Yeah, that's the same time we were there. We were there the 27th through the 1st, I think, or the 26th through the 1st, and everybody was like, oh, you came a week too late, and then other people were like, well, you came a week too early. And
I don't know, we came too early. They beat that tail the second
time. Yeah, I know, they beat it the crap out of
literally. Yep. Oh, ridiculous.
So we left.
We didn't come too early. We came too late.
Yeah. We left on Tuesday, and that blizzard hit, I think, on Friday or Thursday, something like that. And so we missed it just by like the next day. So we were in some kids up there that was their first time coming up there. They were like 18, 19. And I think they had come up there from, I think it was like Louisiana or something. And we met them at a gas station, just got to talking. And, they had got there on like Saturday or Sunday, and they stayed till the blizzard. They freaking smoked them the last two or three days. So I was like, man, I'm kicking myself in the butt right now.
Oh, I know. I was supposed to guide in North Dakota last year. Yeah. I had only been 2 years, and you need that. So if you want to guide in North Dakota, you got to have 2 years.
5 years, right?
No, 3 years. 3 years of life. 3 years of licenses, and then you got to go up and take an in-person written test. Not like an online thing. You got to go up there and take the in-person written test.
Oh.
And so I was actually, at the time, kind of dating a girl in Minnesota, and I'm like, well, I'll just drive my truck, you know. And they've been real lenient on the exemptions, you know, like, all right, if you, you know, got a good record, never been in trouble, and you got 2 years and you pass the test well and blah, blah, and then you got a reference, like, you know, typically they've been handing out exemptions for the three-year rule.
Yeah.
So I drive all the way to North Dakota, take the test, pass it, super excited. Well, they had some change in staffing and throughout the North Dakota game of fish, whatever you want to call it. And, they got very strict on that rule this year. So I didn't get the guide.
Really?
And so I ended up going back. So I kind of bowed out of the group that I normally hunt up there with. And they let me go with them after. And, So the guy was supposed to be it wasn't his outfitter, but like my buddy that we were going to be guiding together and everything that we were looking forward to. Yeah, he was still up there. Oh my, the blizzard, they were just like, it was like stupid, like a playground, you know, like.
Yeah, because all the birds came down from Canada at one time.
Literally. Yeah. One time, they were all the mallards were still up in Canada, minus the photo migrators, and it was pretty stupid. You know, they were like, they weren't even trying and just killing them. So this year, I actually, like, no lie, I promise you, I drove almost around the entire state, like, scouts. I put 8,500 miles on my truck in North Dakota this year.
That's crazy, dude.
For mallards. Yeah. It was wild. I mean that first feed I'm telling you about, I get my buddies, you know, I don't get them hyped up, but like kind of excited. I send them video footage from, you know, my Vortex scope and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
As good as I can hold the iPhone up against the lens.
That's right.
And, you know, I'm like, y'all come on, because they were going to get a hotel and not show up until like, you know, 8 or 9 that morning. I'm like, y'all just come on. I got the feed. Dude, it's the craziest thing. They show up, we hunt, we kill our limit of pintails in like the first 30
seconds. Dude, that's the same thing. We had our pintails in the first 5 minutes of shooting lot every morning.
Yep. And then we'd have a group of 40 sitting in the decoys, and we're like,
yep, can't
shoot them.
Every freaking time. And then no mallards. Dude, that week was rough, man.
It was. Because I scouted the afternoon in that field, and it was mallards and Canadians.
Mm. Yeah.
And then the morning was literally nothing but pintail. Like, I'm telling you, we didn't shoot nothing but pintail. We shot like 2 or 3 widgets. Then we killed like 11 ducks that morning, and I had fully prepped my mind. You know, I'm the type that's like under promise, and then if we do better, you know, great.
Under promise, over delivery.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
And, but in my mind, I over delivered for sure. We left with like 11 ducks, and I'm like, what in the hell just happened? I don't think I saw a pintail one this afternoon. And then that's all we shot today.
Yeah, man. That's crazy. That was the same way, dude. We'd find a place with, you know, a couple thousand ducks and be like, oh, dude, nothing but mallards. And there's a couple pintails in there. Next morning, sure enough, pintails hitting it early. We're like, oh, dude, we're going to smoke them this morning. They're all going to do it like this. Mallards get up a little later. You know, it'll be all right. Sure enough, yeah. 40, 50, 100 pintails work in, come land. You know, can't shoot them because you've already got all your drakes. It's like, man,
just
kills you every time. Every time.
Oh, I'm telling you. We start calling it. It actually became a thing. Like, yeah, we got pintail today. Like, literally.
And I'll tell you, by
the end of the trip.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what's crazy is even in Texas this year.
Yeah.
I saw that happened to us on a bunch of hunts, pintail wise, man. And that doesn't happen here very often.
It really doesn't. And, we killed several pintails every hunt this year.
Yeah. We'd have our limit of pintail first lot. You know, right after first light, we'd have our limit of pintail, and be like, man, where did all these pintail come from? And then you just have them dive bombing the decoys all morning. Yeah. Like, dude, where were these at yesterday? I didn't even see these here yesterday.
Yep.
I'm telling you.
Yeah.
And then I take the flyover count is bullshit.
Oh,
yeah.
Super bullshit, dude.
I'm telling you right now.
Dude, they told me.
You can't prove me otherwise. Nope. And I know it's going to piss so many people off to hear this, but hot
such day. Bullshit. They said that freaking. So, look, dude, I'm on the coast of Texas, right? We're hunting. And I swear to God, this morning we saw 300,000 to 400,000 snows this morning, right? Like, I swear to God, it was stupid. And we weren't hunting snuggies. We were hunting ducks. But, like, we saw multiple feeds that were in the area just full of snows. Well, like 3 or 4 days later, they came out with their report of their sections of how many snows were on the coast. Because, you know, used to the Texas coast would hold like 90% of the central flyways snow population. It doesn't even hold close to that anymore because there's just not as much rice growing down there as there used to be. But they said there was like 50,000 in the area we were hunting. And it was like, it's a big area, man. And I was like, dude, you're telling me I saw every goose in this area in one field that morning?
You're telling me I had the whole population of one field?
Yeah, so I'm in a group on Facebook, and they post those numbers like, anybody else think this is bullshit? And I posted a video from just one of the fields, and I was like, I guess I found all of them. And everybody was like, everybody's like, yeah, it's bullshit, man. I'm like, yeah, dude, I don't even know.
Somebody sitting at their computer just putting a number out there.
Well, yeah, they'll get those flyover numbers and like, yeah, I flew the Mississippi today from Illinois down to Arkansas. There's 300,000 ducks on it. Like, what'd you do? Did you count all of them?
Well, I mean, you know that they also claim that literally one third of the population died in Canada this summer, right?
Yeah, because of the drought.
No, because of the flu.
The bird flu.
I saw stuff about them all dying because of the drought.
Yeah, that bird flu deal was a big deal this year.
No, they're saying that verified biologists are saying that one third of the snow goose population died this summer.
Well, I'm telling you right.
So, I mean, is there 1 billion snow geese?
I saw more snow geese than I've ever seen in Arkansas where I hunt, and also everything I've seen about conservation season has just been the biggest slaughters that I've seen in 5 years. So I'm like, do y'all know the difference between a snow goose and a mallard? Because I don't know. Might have been the mallards dying and the snow geese were just populating real good.
Yeah.
No, dude, and that's one of those crazy things. And then,
That wasn't realistic. That was exaggeration. But I'm saying the snow goose thing, one third of the population, I don't believe it.
No,
well,
at all.
If one third of the population died of snow geese, then I'll tell you this, they must have had a absolute record hatch, and there wouldn't have been enough food for them in the entire United States if one third of them died.
Exactly.
There was a bunch of the white bastards around this year.
If one third died, then we need to make it no plug, no limit throughout the entire season. The whole
100%.
Literally.
Yeah.
The whole year.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't know why it's not like that anyways, because nobody eats them. I mean, there's going to be somebody that chimes in and says, yeah, I mean, they taste good.
Them Cajuns eat everything.
I actually had some Cajuns cook some up that were pretty dang good.
Yeah, but think about Cajuns. they put so many spices and flavors into that they can make a turd taste good.
Yeah, that's true. I don't disagree.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, 100%.
But I don't want to have to get through all that effort. You know?
Yeah, that's funny.
Give me something that's decent tasting from the front of it, and you know we don't have to do 36 seasonings to make it taste good.
Yeah,
yeah. Have you gotten the crane yet?
I have not. So I was actually, because Dennis and them are from Texas and blah, blah. And, you know, that's where cranes are predominant. Like, that's something I said a lot. All I hear is ribeye in the sky. Like, I'm dying to try.
And they really are. They really are delicious, man.
You're missing out.
They do tags, you know, like draw tags for them in Tennessee.
Uh-huh.
But I'm like, I'll be sitting in the deer stand and hear them flying over and see them. But I've never seen them land in Tennessee. I'm like, where do I go to kill one in Tennessee?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I've legitimately, in my entire life, never seen one land in a field or anywhere.
Like, yeah.
I see them flying over all the time and hear them.
And where we're at, there's not any. I've never seen one in a field around here, but you go 2 hours west, you know, you'll start seeing them. And then, you know, further west you go, you'll start seeing more and more. And you get out to the Lubbock area, and there's
abundance, you
know, thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of them.
Yeah,
yeah. No,
but they're cool. They're cool to hunt. They're just like pterodactyls when they're coming in, dude.
The thing that excites me the most about them is how everybody's hyped up how good they are.
Oh, dude, I mean, they are delicious. Yeah. There's no doubt in that.
Yeah. I need to make that happen now. Y'all make that happen for me.
We can make it happen.
Come home with us next year. We'll set it up.
Yeah, we'll make it happen.
I promise you. I'm spontaneous. I'll pop out anytime. You just let me know.
we'll make it happen for sure. For sure.
Heck yeah.
But I'm glad we got you on, man. This was a good one.
Yeah, absolutely. Really good. I've enjoyed it. Hey, yeah, one thing I wanted to hit on, like, majorly is, and we skipped over it because we've had so many tangents. I love it.
Yeah.
But you said Harvard Mallard, dude. Yeah. And that kind of just, like, that hit home with me.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
From the very beginning, and it was crazy. I've never heard anyone else, you know, I've thought, like, how I said sale my whole life, you know,
yeah.
Like these birds. Like in Arkansas, we never had, this year, we never had just like that new
dumb bird.
Push, at least when I was allowed to be there.
They call them community school yeah. birds.
Community college birds.
They just, you know.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah.
But Dennis and Billy always say that, like,
yeah.
especially this year, they were like, man, these Harvard Mallards.
And I'm telling you, always called them.
They ain't lying when they said that this year. Dude, it was crazy.
Yeah.
They've heard every call. They've seen every decoy spread. They've seen every motion. And they're like, nah, I'm just going to go land over here.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, man, it was crazy. One point I want to hit on before we end is that, man, that this year stuck out to me so much because of really the last 5 days of season.
Mm-hmm.
It was top 3 years that I've been hunting in Arkansas, the amount of mallards I've seen over the woods.
Mm-hmm.
But they were the hardest thing to kill you've ever seen in your life.
Yeah.
And so
getting smart.
I have so smart. I got my good buddy Isaac Neal, he's a photographer, and Benjamin Forehand, and they're coming down, and I'm like, man, I haven't hunted this area yet this year, but I scouted and I know what I saw. Like, I know the normal areas that I hunt of this place, they're pressured and
mm-hmm.
et cetera, and there's definitely not the numbers. Let's go try it out. So, I mean, I'm not even going to lie. I'll go ahead and say it right now. I got my absolute butt whipped. I mean, we had so many people down the last week of season. You know, I think we had like 3 groups at one point. Like Dennis and Billy had so many, like, their sons and friends in. And then mm-hmm. Hunter and Dakota had their friends in. And then I had friends that I've been telling I'd take all year and hadn't taken yet. You know, so there was like one point where we finally were like, all right, it's the last week of season. We got to, you know, take some of these people. Yeah, you know, we can't hunt the dream team every day.
Yeah.
So we split up, and man, I'm like, there's a lot of birds in this area. I don't know. We'll pop in this hole. I ain't never hunted it, but feathers everywhere, and the amount of birds that I saw in the woods scouting were ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we get in there and hunt, and I'm gonna go ahead and tell you, I grew up like, hey, your neighbor next to you in the hole, you better have more decoys in them and you better call more than him in the, you know, at least in Arkansas. And so I come out there with like 12 dozen the first day.
Ooh, yeah.
In the woods. Sling them all out. I'm telling you, it's at least 12 dozen. And I'm like, we got 12 dozen, like 4 jerk rigs. We're good.
Yeah.
Man, we get in there and there's just, I mean, from sunlight, you know, from sunrise till 11, first day, nonstop flights. And they're getting on our hole, coming in and never flaring, never once flaring, but just like flying past us and landing like 150 yards away.
100, yep.
Yeah, they know what's up.
And I'm like, I'm telling you, I was like, what's going on here? So, like, I'm like, all right, you know, 9 o'clock, let's move over here. And we just grab like 3 dozen real quick and move over there. And we'd shoot a couple, and then I'd go back to get the boat, letting those guys hunt since they don't get to hunt as much as me. And I'd literally be by myself with like 9 dozen still sitting around me. But I just walked through that whole area where there's ripples everywhere. And I swear to God, a group of 15 came and landed in them. Didn't call one time. No, I swear on my life.
That's crazy.
Like, didn't call one time. I'm literally walking, not even trying to hide. Now, granted, this is some thick timber, very thick.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like outside of that little hole, you're pretty well hidden. I mean, there's no leaves, so, but it's thick. But yeah. All I did was walk through the middle of the decoys.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, a group of 15 lands in them.
Mm.
And then, my kind of, you know, my digestive system hit. I kind of needed to, you know, hit a number two. And I promise you, I'm sitting in the boat 30 yards outside of the hole. Still nobody calling. Ain't no guns in my hole. Still got that same 8 dozen out. And, but the ripples are still there. I mean, this is all like back to back, that 15. And then I'm like, I'm so close to my other group that I'm like yelling. I'm like, 15 just landed in the hole. So obviously it scares them out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they couldn't hear me, but I was just like baffled. So I start taking a deuce off the side of the boat, and I have like 8 more ducks in like 3 different groups laying in the decoys while I'm sitting there. Mallard.
That's crazy.
And I'm like, what the hell? So then the next day, I'm like, all right, I'm going to reduce the spread size a little bit. You know, we're going to move over more to like the blowdown type hole.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So we get to the blowdown hole where they were landing in the day before, same wind. And, it's the same thing. Like the jerk rigs weren't doing it.
Mm.
But then like I'd go out to move decoys.
Yeah.
And I swear to God, they'd try and sit on top of me while I was moving the decoys.
Yeah.
That's
crazy. But then if I hid behind a tree, they wouldn't come in.
Yeah. So they wanted to see.
That started tickling. I'm telling you, it started tickling my brain more. And then finally the third day, I'm with Isaac and Benjamin and, you know, the rest of the people. I had like 4 other guys that were in from West Tennessee, neighbors of my buddy and et cetera. And, you know, they were great hunters, nothing against them at all. Like it was us figuring out the decoys, you know, and everything.
Yeah.
And finally the third day, last day of season, I'm like, this goes against every inkling in my body, but I think I'm only going to throw out 2 dozen today.
Yeah.
And, you know, anything that's out is going to be moving. And if it's not, I'm going to be kicking the heck out of the water.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Dude. And I'm telling you, like, it's hard to explain. I wish I had it all on video. And Isaac does have some video of it. So it's going to be pretty cool to see what comes out of it. He's still editing it. But, like, I could hammer on a group of 20. Mallards, like treetop highs, you know, just not hammer them like they're over the hole, but like they're treetop high and they're clearly about to like go somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And I just saw them and I hit them and they don't even think about looking at me. And I would grab a tree and kick that water as hard as I could. And they would hear the sound of that water splashing. And I swear to God, every one of them would turn on a V-line. And on the last day of season, late January, mallards, stale as crap.
Yeah.
They would suck through this tiny little blowdown and land in the decoys.
There you go.
And that's crazy. And I've never seen that before in my life.
So that's like, one thing that we realized, I guess, it might have been the end of last year, was, you know, towards the end of the year, you get those stale mallards, especially if, you know, I wouldn't say I'm a malpierce, but that's what I like to kill.
Yeah.
So, you know. You're hunting mallards late season, and I know it's like this in Texas, but if you're hunting mallards late season in Texas, if every duck you need out there needs to be moving somehow, you know,
more
and every, and less is more a lot of times.
Yeah.
or, you know, if you're hunting.
I know, in that area that I've been in, it always seems like we used to get like a really big push the last week of season. And uh-huh. I've never had to have that growing experience. Uh-huh. Yeah. Like, I'm telling you, I got my tail whooped.
Well, then, see, what happened was, is y'all stupid birds, they came to Texas this year, yeah. and our smart birds came over there.
Yep.
They came right to
That's
us.
That's exactly what happened.
Hey, but it was like, it was the craziest thing. It was like that kicking of the water. Like, I'm talking about Kurt McCullough, waders around the waist, sweating, kicking. Like, I ain't talking about like a little just tap splash. Like, I'm talking about I was kicking the piss out of the water.
Oh, yeah.
My Apple Watch said I burned like 6,000 calories during the swear to God.
Yeah, dude. I'm actually, you probably sore the next day.
That would turn them. And then if I wouldn't hit the call at all, they would just look at it. Because obviously you don't want to kick the shit out of the water.
Yeah.
And they're right over you. So then we, like, it was like a full morning experience. So I kicked shit out of the water. They'd turn. Then we wouldn't do anything but calls and just hit Drake whistles. And they'd look really close and, like, dip the trees, but they wouldn't finish.
Yeah.
And, dude, so finally I was like, screw it. I'm going to do what I normally do, but just add all the motion to the decoys. So they'd spin around, hit, kick the water, and I would be sitting there bouncing him, and it was the craziest thing. I mean, we were laying in groups of 15 on the last day of season, which is unheard of.
Yeah.
In Arkansas. Like, coming to the call like we were talking about in North Dakota.
Yeah. Well, and so I was supposed to go to Arkansas. I guess we can finish with this. I was supposed to go to Arkansas last week, and the season was actually on our way. And so I had a group already up there. I couldn't get off that Thursday, so they went up on Wednesday. I was headed up there Thursday afternoon, took off Friday and Monday, was ready to go. And one of the boats broke down. They were already up there. So one of the boats broke down, another one had something wrong. So they were all piling into like one and a half boats, you know. So I was like, yeah, I'm just not going to get. And they hadn't really been finding anything. And they had the same problem you did. They'd find a bunch of birds. They go sit up on them the next morning. And they land 300 or 400 yards away. No matter what they did, you know, change decoys, do whatever. Mm-hmm. Well, the last day of season, which I guess was what, Monday or Tuesday?
Yeah, Tuesday, I think.
Tuesday, yeah. So Tuesday, they had the same thing happen to them. Was just by that time, they figured out, hey, let's just throw out, like, I think they threw out, like, 18 decoys on Tuesday. And did a lot of motion. Like, just one person called, just a little hen chuckle on the way down. They smoked them that last day, too. So I think that was a learning experience for everybody.
That was the biggest learning experience I've had since, like, my adult duck hunting career.
I mean, yeah.
Seriously. We made blinds. We got lucky and found some limbs that were hanging off in the water that still had leaves on them. And we were grabbing them, and we stacked up, like, the coolest, like, standing in water blinds you've ever seen.
Yeah.
And it was insane. We killed a band that day.
Heck yeah.
And for 6 years in a row, we've killed a band on my birthday or the day after. My birthday is January 28th.
Lucky man.
No, I don't ever get it. It's always somebody else. I'm just
a good luck charm.
Well, I've been lucky in the sense if I kill them earlier in the year and I'll shoot the only one and it's banded.
Yeah.
But like on my birthday, I never get the band. And
last day of season,
I was like, we hadn't killed them. We hadn't killed a band yet. I'm like, okay, well, this don't make sense. Boom, we finally do it right. My buddy Ben gets the band. Isaac's getting the whole band. It was cool.
That's awesome. Yeah, man,
we're on the camera getting it.
Dude, we only killed one band this year, and we were already I think we only needed like two or three ducks for our limit, and it was probably like 10 o'clock, and two pintail drakes come in, and just two of my buddies were like, all right, y'all two shoot, get these two. I think that was what finished our limit, and so just two guys shot, each of them shot one time, and dog brings bird back. Sure enough, it has a freaking band on it. Nobody else shot at it. So the one guy had, you know, that never happens where the guy can actually be like, oh, I shot it.
Oh my God.
Nobody else could even argue with it. because he was the only one that shot at it. It was like, oh my God, are you freaking kidding me, dude? I should have shot.
No, dead serious. I have 5 bands, and every one that I've got has been, I was the only one who shot at that duck.
Yeah, that's freaking lucky out there. You don't have to draw straws. Yeah. Every band I've freaking been a part of is draw straws, and I always freaking lose.
Oh, yeah. Straws, I know. I go ahead and know. I shouldn't even enter it because I know I'm losing.
Sure, man. Well, dude, it was awesome having you on here, dude. And I'm really looking forward to hopefully hunting some cranes this year.
Yeah, we'll get you on some cranes.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank y'all for having me, man. Sorry that I ran so long. I'm just super passionate about
this
stuff.
No, dude. We can sit here and talk about it for 6-7 hours, dude.
Yeah, we've had a couple longer than this.
We're at 2 hours and 2 minutes, and I could go for 3 more hours.
Oh, me too, dude. Me too. And you know, when we get together this year,
we'll do a live pod.
We'll do another podcast, and it might be more of a documentary than a podcast.
There we go.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it. Give me the crane hunt. I'll give y'all the... Well, I mean, I know y'all boys already getting our...
I know.
Hey, we kill our fair share of mallards, but we'll come help you kill yours too.
Yeah. Come help me. Please come help me.
Well, let them know where they can find you at on social media, buddy.
Yeah, so you can find me on social media. It's just Nathan.Forrest. That's a little tricky. Forriest. Check it out. Try and do some cool stuff, kind of, you know, just content and whatnot.
Yeah.
And, you know, me and Riley Girl, my dog, we just have fun trying to just relate to everybody that, you know, loves it like we do.
Absolutely. Absolutely, man. Thank you so much for taking your time out to come on, man. We really enjoyed talking to you, and we'll definitely link up and kill some birds together this year.
Absolutely. Enjoy it, fellas.
All right. Heck yeah, man. Talk to you later.
You take it easy, brother.
All right. Look forward to it.
Bye.
Bye.
There's another good one in the books. If y'all hung around for that one, you're a trooper. We haven't done a podcast that long in a while. We've done some longer, but thank y'all for listening to another episode of the Quack Shack Podcast. Thank you for listening, liking, and sharing our stuff on Instagram. And if you're not following us yet on Instagram, I suggest just do it right now. Just go over there to Instagram at the Quack Shack Podcast. Hit the follow button. We'd really appreciate that. We've got some pretty awesome stuff we're working on for the Quack Shack. More details to come. But y'all stay tuned. Follow us on Instagram to hear about that. We might, you know, actually we'll probably release it on the podcast first. So appreciate y'all listening to another episode. Y'all take it easy. Peace. Apex VPC. Listen, guys, I know being a waterfowl hunter with the ammo shortage, or maybe they're just flying off the shelves, can be kind of difficult. And then, you know, when you do find something, it's not what you want. I'll give you my 2 cents on it. I think Apex Ammunition has definitely made a dent into the waterfowl community. They're coming in a strong way. They have some of the best ammunition on the market. Whether you're a turkey hunter, a waterfowl hunter, a deer hunter, maybe a coyote hunter, they've got something over there for you. On the waterfowl side, they've got the Steel for 12 and 20. They've got the TSS S3 Steel Blend, and then they have the TSS Waterfowl, and also the Mossy Oak Shadowgrass Habitat Blend. They've got quite a few different options over there. The patterning is awesome. The casings, you know, everything is just top of the line. Being a veteran and American company, it's awesome to have them a part of this podcast. Y'all go check out Apex Ammunition on Instagram and apexammunition.com. Hey, you might need a new a gun strap for the shotgun that you that you use on a daily basis, or maybe you need a new lanyard for your duck call. Maybe you need a tote to haul around all them ducks y'all be killing, because I see some of y'all. VPC Lanyards has a variety of handmade products when it comes to that. You can get a tote, a lanyard, gun strap, maybe a belt, some sunglass strap, Jeep handles, you name it. Our boy Wes over at VPC's got you covered. Multiple different colors, multiple different styles. If you haven't seen his work, go check out VPC Lanyards on Instagram or Facebook. Check out some of the styles he's got, some of the color options he's got. Best in the business, 110%. Go check out VPC Lanyards on Instagram and Facebook. Tell them the Quack Shack sent you.
Raised in the South, I come up from nothing, I figured it out. They say when I sing, I'm the voice of the South. Give thanks to the Lord, cause I'm making it out. I can't believe I'm living my dream. Early morning flights, the skies are filled up with these whistling wings. Slice that dreams are made of. Look at God's creation. Dust coming in as we struggle to load. Kid number two is a hell of a load. Shots going off as they dropping the hood. It's so cold and my call keeps ticking. I'm being precise with the notes I'm picking. My lead is true, so no duck I'm missing. Full choke, so I'm good at a distance. I shoulda retake. I shoulda retake. I shoulda retake.